Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to our show. It's Saturday, time for our usual end-of-the-week wrap-up. And, boy, there's just a lot of stuff been happening. This is a live show, so, again, if you want to join us on the air today for the next 2 hours, the phone number is 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. Ethan is manning the phones and feeding the mutant hamster today. So say hello to him when you call in, because he's working real hard twiddling those dials and dealing with little fur balls that are gathering down around the bottom of the furniture there. Obviously, this week, the economy and Gaza and the final days of the Bush administration, the impending inauguration of Barack Obama, dominate the news. We're going to start with the economy first. The California State Comptroller announced yesterday that his office would suspend tax refunds, welfare payments, grant checks to students. Today, California citizens announced that they're going to suspend paying taxes, which certainly sounds fair to me. No, they didn't really say that, but one could hardly fault them for wanting to do so. We're all paying very, very high taxes to a government which is giving less and less back in their rush to deal with the extraordinary amount of debt they have piled up. And, of course, most of that debt has been created via the military-industrial complex. Even as there is talk about a ceasefire in Gaza, the United States continues to send more weapons to Israel. And there was some confusion about whether there was or was not an arms shipment from the United States on its way to Israel right now. It turns out there are actually three, one of which has been canceled due to the public outcry. And the U.S. is excusing these other two shipments, saying that we're not really giving the weapons to Israel. We're merely storing them at a U.S. depot inside Israel. And we will give them to Israel only if Israel is having an emergency, with the exact definition of an emergency very much left up in the air and presumably under the control of Israel to determine when that happens. Meanwhile, some of these white phosphorus shells that are being used on the Gazan people, this is, by the way, illegal under international law. It is a war crime to use these weapons on people. The remains of the shells have been found and identified, and according to Jane's Defense, these are white phosphorus weapons from the United States of America. Now, when we first ran the story about the particular munition, I got a bunch of emails from people saying, oh, no, it's only a smoke bomb. It's a smoke bomb. It's not an anti-personnel weapon. And Jane's Defense says, yes, one of its uses is as a smoke generator, because when you burn white phosphorus, it makes huge, vast amounts of white smoke. Very toxic, by the way. If you breathe it, it will ruin your lungs. But its use as a smoke generator is considered legal, certainly by Israel. But the bottom line is, when you have 1.5 million people in that very, very tiny area and you fire white phosphorus shells in there, it's going to hit people and it's going to hit buildings and it's going to set them on fire. So this is not a benign smoke-generating weapon. And certainly the fact that they used white phosphorus on some of the UN installations there indicates it is being used as a munition against ground targets, not just generating smoke. Now, getting back to the economy here, I didn't mean to get into Gaza and Israel. We'll certainly get into that a little bit later on. But turning to the economy, the downturn is very much global. We're hearing that Ireland is now in trouble, even though they stayed out of some of the derivative situation, inevitably because so much of their money was invested with other countries in the European Union. They are getting dragged down. They're now in serious trouble. We know, of course, Iceland went bankrupt several weeks back there. We have a T-shirt we sell at our website saying, richer than Iceland. And it's funny, when I first got it, people would scratch their heads. Now they all understand. Now they all understand, and they laugh with that one. But by a wide margin, the favorite T-shirt among people still is this one. I'm wearing it today if you're watching on the webcam. I survived the Bush economy, and all I have left is this lousy T-shirt. People see that one, they just start laughing. And, you know, it's amazing. The media is still claiming that President Bush has a 22% approval rating. I have no idea where they're conducting these polls. It must be at the Israeli embassy or at the convention for the military-industrial complex, weapons dealers, things like that. Or they're polling the criminally insane again, as my darling wife Claire likes to say. Meanwhile, economic riots are breaking out in Lithuania now. as that government tries to impose what are called austerity measures. This is a very polite term for saying the poor must agree to be poorer so the rich can have another go at the derivatives casino. And that's going to be a tough sell. It's always a tough sell. To steal from the poor, to give to the rich, that's not very popular. It makes for a really, really terrible, terrible story in the outcome. And we're seeing more and more of these riots, and the American media is not covering them. They're not even really giving a lot of coverage to the rioting we are having in the United States up in Oakland. They gave very, very little coverage to the riots came out of the police shooting. This basically tells me the American media knows that the United States is really right on the edge, right on the edge. Meanwhile, that bastion of economic wisdom, the Wall Street Journal, ran an editorial op-ed calling for a zero tax rate for corporations, saying that this, rather than a return to the New Deal, was the way to revitalize the economy. And the problem with this is more of the tax cuts for the rich crap that got us into this mess. Now, I'm not saying I'm in favor of the New Deal, and I don't agree with Barack Obama's proposals for reasons I will get into almost immediately here. But getting back to this Wall Street Journal, this is just more of, you know, let the rich keep their money, and we promise we'll do good things with it. We have been hearing that all the way back to the days of the trickle-down theory under Reagan. And long, painful experience has shown that when the rich and the corporations get tax cuts, they don't trickle down the money to us. They keep it. They put it in their pockets. They put it in their offshore tax havens. They put it into bonuses, into executive perks, into yachts, corporate jets. They hire a few extra young and good-looking executive assistants to accompany them around to all the conventions and trade shows, that kind of a thing. Pouring in money at the top does not improve the economy for everybody, because poured in at the top, it stays at the top. If we want to revitalize this economy, the American people, the middle class, the working class, need a tax cut, a major one, 50% across the board. Not just a few token tax credits, $100 here, $100 there. That's nothing. It may look good in the newspapers. It really is not going to affect our lives. This is tax season. I'm sure you're all looking at your W-2s and your 1099s, and you're looking at that and calculating out how much the government is going to take from you this year with various and sundry programs. They break it up to sort of conceal how much really is taken from you and given to the government. But if you take all the taxes that you paid, if you're working for wages and salary, take your W-2 and add up all the things that have been taken out, federal income tax, state income tax, Social Security, all these other little initial alphabet soup things you don't even know what they're really going to, but they took money for it, and you have no idea. Then take your salary and take 22% of that, because that's about what your employer had to pay in taxes for the privilege of hiring you, and add that to the total tax burden, and you will see that the government makes more money off of your work than you do. Now, that's a very, very deplorable situation. Half of that money, at least at the federal level, half of that money is going into war. We're going broke, killing brown people across the globe. And I know for a certain segment of our society, losing the right and the ability to go out and kill brown people is a serious loss. But I, for one, being slightly brown myself, am willing to live without that. And if we could just get away from this addiction, as Eisenhower tried to get us, if we could get away from this addiction of going around the world killing brown people, we could save a lot of money. We wouldn't have to cut any other services. The government could go on doing everything it's doing now except killing brown people, and we could have a 50% tax cut. Now, just imagine what you could do with that extra 50% of your taxes back in your pocket. You could get your mortgage up to date. That would end the banking crisis. You could pay down your credit cards. You could go out and start spending again. That would revive retail and manufacturing. This is such an incredibly good idea. I don't understand why we don't do it. We're going to take a break here. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors. And if you want to join us on the line and talk about taxes and money and whether or not we should cut taxes by half and end wars, 800-259-9231. We'll be right back.
is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're talking about the economy today, and we're talking about taxes, and we're talking about how do we get the United States moving forward in a way that benefits the American people as a whole, not just a few choice corporations, not just Halliburton, not just the defense industry. They're making out really good right now. How do we get the economy moving forward for everybody? And the bottom line is, as we were saying before the break, we need a major tax break for the American people. And we're responding here to this editorial that came out in the Wall Street Journal insisting that the only way to fix the economy is a zero tax rate for corporations, which is more of the same tax cuts for the rich crap that got us into this mess in the first place. Now, everyone likes to equate an economy to a building or a pyramid. And in a lot of ways, that is very much true. But whether you talk about a building or a pyramid, everybody agrees that an economy ultimately rests on a foundation made up of the working class people, because labor precedes capital. The labor of the working class creates real wealth. And by real wealth, I mean actual tangible assets, as opposed to the fictitious kind of paper money notes the Federal Reserve prints up and hands out like they're giving away their own children. The real wealth of a nation is it's in fixed, tangible assets, and those are all made by the hands of the working people. Okay? That's the foundation. If you need to pick up and move a building, and we've seen this on TV all the time, you have to pick it up by the foundation. If you try and pick a building up by the roof, it'll shatter. The roof will come off and it'll all come apart. Foundation probably won't even move at all. And that's what all of these bailout plans and this talk about zero tax rate for the corporations and tax cuts for the rich, they're trying to pick up the economy by its roof. And it doesn't work. We've had 8 years of demonstration that giving more money to the rich of this country does not improve the economy. If anything, it just allows them to go to that casino on Wall Street, spin the wheel, and run up the derivatives, and then stick the rest of us with the bill. It didn't work. Now, that doesn't mean I'm in favor of a New Deal. And it doesn't mean I totally support Barack Obama's plan to create 3 million new jobs against an already existing unemployment rate of 11 million, if I recall my figures correctly, by putting us all to work fixing the roads and the bridges and the rail lines. Now, yes, those need to be repaired. Our infrastructure has been allowed to deteriorate terribly, as the survivors of Hurricane Katrina will attest. But you don't prosper a nation by just moving the money around and finding make work for people. If you want this nation to become prosperous again, it's not just enough to put more money back in the hands of the working class and middle class people. You need to be making products that other countries will buy. And that is where this nation really, really lost its way. We let our manufacturing go away. We somehow, between the Harvard Business School creating scientific management and the MBA, and this whole idea that instead of making products to make money, we should make money the product, we created a whole generation of a government culture, a corporate culture, that looks on manufacturing as a necessary inconvenience to enter the world of big business. And when you have a management culture that lacks respect for manufacturing, then you're going to get shoddy manufacturing. And you're going to get value engineering. And you're going to get the kind of business decisions we've seen over the last 20 years that have turned the United States from previously the country that made the best of everything in the world into a third-rate, sometimes can kind of make it, third-world backwater. The other countries send their junky products to us now because we just don't make anything that they want to buy from us. And that is really where our country went wrong. We lost our manufacturing. And the politicians can't fix it. They don't even want to look at it because they know they can't fix it soon enough to help them in the next election. And one of the drawbacks of our particular system of government, I'm not saying change it, but just be aware of it. Inevitably, our political leadership is only interested in solutions that will make them look good before the next election, 2 years from now. Now, we're not going to bring manufacturing back in just 2 years. We're not going to bring it back in 6 years. We're not even going to bring it back, really, in 8 years. And this is why this is not a priority for our government. And so we're kind of stuck here, if you really think about it. If we're not making products other countries want to buy, then we don't have any new money coming into the United States. And if we don't have new money coming into the United States and we're having to buy things from other countries, sooner or later we run out of money. And inevitably, you get a government that starts developing the mindset, well, we better go conquer something so that we can sell it to other people and get money that way. And so a big part of this brouhaha we are seeing in the Middle East is a desire to turn oil from an exported product, from an imported product into the United States, into an American export. Because if we steal all the oil from Iraq and Iran and Saudi Arabia and all these other Middle Eastern countries, and we put them under the control of American companies, and they start selling it, even though it's still in the Middle East, it's now on paper, it's an American product, and money starts coming back into the country. And so all this talk about clash of civilizations and all the rest of it is just to cover the United States government can't fix our manufacturing and they can't fix our economy. They're going to go out and conquer somebody else's economic resources to make them ours. And they're going to trade your kids to do it. And along the way, of course, there are certain people who just say, oh, great, you're going to go attack and invade the people we hate. We'll cheer you right on and stand here at the side and wave at you as you walk on by. So this idea that Barack Obama is going to fix the economy with a $100 tax credit here and another easement of a percentage point over here, it isn't going to work. In fact, it's not change that we can believe in, because it's just more of the same. They're just moving things around a little bit on the edge to make it look like they're doing something. But the core issue, taxes are way too high in this country for what we get back. That is the basic problem. Now, I've said this before. An economy is like an engine in a truck. And taxes are the load you put on the truck. And you put more of a load and more of a load and more of a load. Now, that engine needs some of its own power to run itself, past its own friction, drive the valves and the timing chain and the alternator and the rest of it. And the more of a load you put in the truck, okay, the harder that engine works. And you add a trailer and you put more load there. Sooner or later, you're going to hit the point where the load in the truck bed and on the trailer is taking so much energy away from that engine, the engine doesn't have enough power to run itself. And that's when the truck will stall. If you've ever tried to take a vehicle with a heavy load up a steep hill, you'll reach a point where the engine might actually stall, and you don't have enough power to get it going again. The United States is at that stage right now. Our economy is barely ticking by because it has so much weight on it in the form of taxes that the engine is stuttering and it is about to stall. We can feel it when you're watching the Dow go up and down and up and down and up and down as they try and suck more money out of the American people, out of the economy. It's stuttering now. And the only way to get it running smoothly is to cut the load in half. We're going to take another break here. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors. Join us on the air, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. We will be right back.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. I'm watching the feed coming in here to the studio from the corporate media. And, yes, I do tune into the TV network news mostly to find out what they're distracting us from and what they don't want us to be looking at. And, of course, the coverage is all about how everybody's getting on the train to head into Washington, D.C. for the inaugural. It's going to be a big, big, big party. And it really is a manufactured distraction. And yes, it's a nice-looking train, and I like trains. I used to ride trains all the time when I was working in Europe, and they can be a great deal of fun. But it isn't really news. It's celebrity gossip at best, because until they're actually sworn in and doing the job that we, the taxpayers, pay for them, then all of this other Sturm und Drang is just celebrity gossip. Ooh, the stars are on a train going to Washington, D.C., and they're talking about how the weather's going to be really cold and Barack Obama wants the inauguration outdoors and it may be forced indoors and so forth and so on. And I mention that only because it seems to be symbolically appropriate, because I think Barack Obama is probably going to be getting one of the chilliest receptions in recent memory into the political establishment, both because he is still viewed as an outsider by much of the entrenched Washington bureaucracy, and certainly because a lot of his decisions in his transition have not gone down well with people who supported him, and he's lost already a lot of the trust and faith people had in him. In fact, he's really going into the White House kind of being viewed as Clinton light, which is definitely not a positive recommendation. But getting back to the economy, a couple more stories, then we're going to get into the Mideast situation. There is yet another bank bailout plan to fight the deepening recession. And I call this the steal from the poor and give to the rich plan. And this gets back to that analogy about trying to pick up a building from the roof that I mentioned in the last segment, because it should be obvious by now that taking tax money or printing up new money, which the taxpayers will have to eventually replace and redeem, and pouring it in at the top isn't working. I mean, AIG took the money and threw themselves a really big party. And we're already hearing from the numbers in December that all of this bailout did not reduce the number of foreclosures and filings, the special programs they put in to try and delay things to give people a chance to reorganize their finances. That didn't work because there's nothing to reorganize to. The money is going in at the top, and it's staying there at the top, and they're just continuing to do this. They're taking a program, a plan, which provably has not worked to this date, and they're going to repeat it. That's why I call it stealing from the poor and giving to the rich. And again, if you go to the What Really Happened store, we have coffee cups and T-shirts, which basically say on them, the last official act of any government is to loot the nation. And that's what's going on here. They're looting the nation. They're trying to fix the problem. They're trying to make we the people pay for all the Bernie Madoffs that wrecked the economy on Wall Street. And they're finding more of these guys that were running these scams. Apparently, one gentleman has just disappeared from Sarasota, Florida, after leaving a suicide note and given the other fund manager earlier in the week, who was caught trying to fake a suicide so that he could leave town with all of the goodies. I'm not convinced that our guy from Sarasota is in any imminent dire physical danger. He's probably out there with Ken Lay playing canasta. So they're going to stick we the people with all the losses for all of this, and provably it does not work. Looting. And meanwhile, let's see, the National Bank of Commerce was closed yesterday by regulators. They have the dubious distinction of being the first bank failure of 2009. Barclays has lost billions off of its share value. And so it goes, and we're hearing more and more layoffs. Google is letting some of their recruiters go. Boy, that'll tell you right there how bad things are getting. Now, something kind of a little light and benign, but I feel like I wanted to mention it. This last week marked the occasion where analog television broadcasting came to an end in the United States and was replaced by digital over-the-air broadcasting. And a lot of people were very concerned about that. And for those of you who still have your analog sets, don't worry. Those analog channels are still there. They're just showing commercials for the converter boxes 24 hours a day right now until they're finally turned off. Now, in my day job, I work in film, and usually the film cameras have this little TV transmitter on them so that you can see what the cameraman is seeing. And so I have this little TV set that I will use on the set to see what the cameraman is shooting as I do my part of the process. During our earthquake and subsequent power failure, I had occasion to use that TV to pick up the news and find out what was going on when we were going to get our electricity back. And on a whim, I pulled it out yesterday and turned it on and discovered, much to my very pleasant surprise, that it is capable of receiving the digital TV signals. That was the good news. The bad news was, where I live, and I'm not that far from Honolulu, not one of those digital TV stations was coming in clearly. There was constant breakup in the picture, constant breakup in the sound. And this really underscores that a lot of people were saying that for people who are living in those fringe areas, which is where 90% of those analog TV sets are, they're not going to be able to see the signal. They'll pick it up, but they're not going to get decent pictures. At least with the analog, there might be a little snow and noise pattern on it, but you could see the picture and you could hear the sound. Not so with the digital. And I'm wondering if this was just sheer stupidity on the planning of the FCC, or if this wasn't a sales campaign to force those people not paying money for cable TV service to finally sign up. Because that is going to be the inevitable result. Because those people who are receiving their signal over the air, even with a converter box, they may not be getting a good picture. I'm not, and I'm not in an outlying area. I'm sitting here right next to Pearl Harbor, and I'm not able to get a clear signal. I suppose their recommendation would be, well, you need to buy a new $200 antenna and put it up on your house with a preamp and a high gain and a Yagi and a rest of it. We're going to go to the phones. We've got Diane in Wisconsin. Aloha, Diane. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Hey, you were talking earlier about the money going back into the system, and I was looking at the website earlier, and someone had basically mm-hmm. said that the idea was to just let people, you know, let businesses fail, and we'll deal with it. And the problem that mm-hmm. I see with just letting, you know, the businesses fail is that we've already injected how many billions of dollars into the system to allow the people who are causing the problem to buy up the assets that are still good.
Well, that's part of the problem, but we the taxpayers, we've been forced to inject more money into some of these businesses than the businesses are actually worth. We're talking about $180 billion going into this company and $40 billion going into that company, and you look on paper, they're only worth $5 or $6 billion,
right.
You know, if somebody were to actually sell them. So, you know, we're throwing a lot of good money after bad, and as it turns out, the TARP fund, no sooner had it passed, they weren't buying up these so-called toxic assets. They were just putting the money as direct cash injections into the bank. So the toxic assets are still out there, they're still on the books, and they're still affecting the credit industry. And so this $800 billion program literally got hijacked as soon as it was passed. And the Treasury Secretary said nobody's allowed to look at what we're doing with it. It's a looting of the Treasury. And the Federal Reserve is printing up all this money. They're giving up. They won't tell us who's getting it or what collateral has been pledged, if any, to secure these loans. It's a bank robbery, the biggest bank robbery in the world, and it's our bank.
So we need to stop using the bank.
Well, a lot of people would say it's time to get rid of the Federal Reserve because our nation's economic woes all track back to 1913
mm-hmm.
when a group of congressmen went into Congress during the Christmas break, waived the quorum rule, and then voted through the Federal Reserve Act, which Woodrow Wilson signed because that was the deal he'd made to get the money to become president of the United States. And he wrote in his own diary, "I have destroyed my own country." Diane, thank you for the call. We got to take a break here. We'll be back with Philip in Kentucky after these words from our sponsors. Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. This is our last segment of Hour 1. Then we'll take a news break and be going into Hour 2. We've got callers waiting on the line. We're going to go to Philip in Kentucky. Aloha, Philip. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Mike. I was listening to your show. And by the way, I love your show.
Thank you.
I was listening to your show a few days ago, and you were mentioning about the, you know, the interest-based lending with the U.S. banks compared to banks are governed under, I guess, Islamic Sharia law.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't thought this all the way out, you know. It's just kind of a passing thought I had. But, I mean, for individual people, maybe not living paycheck to paycheck, but for people's assets, if they had their, you know, assets in the U.S. bank, if they can maybe move them into a bank that's governed under, you know, the Sharia law. I mean, yes, their money wouldn't be gaining any interest, but it may be protected. And I thought of that, and, you know, yes, you can go buy gold and silver that would retain its value, but it wouldn't be really, you couldn't really use it, you know, from day to day. So I thought that may be a way to protect people's assets. I don't know all
well,
the rules governing that, though.
Well, definitely the first of all, the key to survival in any serious economic situation is diversification. You don't want to put all of your economic eggs in one basket.
Yes.
And certainly putting some of your surplus cash or your savings into gold and silver is a really good idea. And we here at GCN, of course, we have a gold brokerage as one of our key sponsors and owners here. And so we always refer people to that. But that's always a very good idea, and that's what we do. If you have a savings account right now, you need to look at the rate of interest you're being paid on that savings account versus the rate of inflation. Because if the rate of inflation is actually higher than the interest you're getting in your savings account, you're losing purchasing power just by leaving your money in the bank right there.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of people are going to say, oh, don't say that. They'll pull their money out of the banks and the banks will collapse. No, they actually won't, because the way the American banking system works, the way the reserve banking system works, the banks just print up the money they need to loan. And there are supposed to be rules that they have to have so much citizens' deposits in for so much that they're able to lend out. But we're already hearing the U.S. government saying they're just going to simply drop that rule entirely. So banks won't even need your deposits anymore. You know, they'll certainly handle your checking account because they get fees on that. But no, the reality is that there are better places to put your money. Now, as far as the Islamic system of fee-based lending versus compounded interest. The fee-based system is that I will loan you so much money and you will pay it back within so much time, and there is a flat fee attached to that, okay? Whereas in the compound interest system, you know, the interest keeps piling up and piling up the longer you take to pay it back. And one of the things the United States was accused of doing in Central and South America is we would go in and loan their governments a bunch of money at compound interest. Then the U.S. would covertly start sabotaging certain key industries or agriculture. So the government would then have to stretch out the payments, and the interest would start piling up until finally that government is in total debt slavery to the United States. The U.S. government was literally using its international banks as a covert instrument of foreign policy. And this is one of the reasons why so many of those South American countries really hate us. Now, when you hear the phrase clash of civilization, what they're really talking about is that difference between the Rothschild-style banking system with compound interest versus the Islamic style of flat fee-based lending, which, you know, it doesn't make anywhere near as much money, but it's not as destructive of the society. I mean, even the Christian Bible, there are prohibitions against usury in it.
Yeah.
Yet we practice it today. And, you know, there is a reason for it in there, because in ancient times, as usury was practiced, it brought down even the mighty Roman Empire was brought down by compounding interest. What the enemies of Rome could not do by conquest, debt and compounded interest did from inside. And it's doing it to the United States right now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's all I had. It was just kind of thought, you know, if somebody had that, you know, they could, you know, move them over, but.
Diversify.
Yeah,
me,
yeah.
I favor canned foods and shotguns.
Yeah. I guess
that's
the best investment today. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot, Philip. We're going to switch over to Thomas in Sweden. Aloha, Thomas. Welcome back to the show. What's on your mind today?
Yes, good morning. Aloha, Mr. River. Yeah, one little thing about, you talked about digital TV.
Mm-hmm.
We're all supposed to be saving energy, so there'll be enough electricity to heat up and light up Al Gore's 10,000-square-foot mansion in Tennessee, right?
Correct.
Now, if I figure there's, what, about 300 million people in America, this must mean about 100 million of these little boxes you have to hook up between your antenna and the TV. How much electricity are they going to be using?
Oh, quite a bit. It's a one more sneak appliance, because these people with the converter boxes, they won't be turning them off when they turn off the TV. It's like most people leave their cable TV box turned on all the time. They just turn off the TV and the stereo amp, maybe. But they're leaving the little converter boxes and everything else are on. That little light is glowing in the dark. It's all using a huge amount of electricity. And but nobody's really paying attention to that, because the real issue behind Al Gore and his global warming isn't for us to really save energy and electricity. It's just to find another excuse to tax us for more money. And Al Gore's fighting an uphill battle, because we just this second put the story up on whatreallyhappened.com. Three deaths in Thailand have been blamed on an unexpected cold snap. So even down there in sunny tropical Thailand, the cold is getting very, very severe over there. But it really is. Government operates by creating an enemy that you're all supposed to be terrified of, and then government will sell you the solution. And, you know, in an age where most people really are capable of being quite self-sufficient, government tries to get really creative to come up with something they're going to take care of for you at considerable cost and loss of liberty, whether it's the war on drugs, the war on poverty, the war on nouns, the war on terror, the war on vacuous, you know, pontifications, the war on global warming, the war on wars. And it's just, you know, they have to create a new terror that we're going to be afraid of. And now, of course, all these other wars, you know, people are saying it's not working. The war on global warming is fading as a cause, especially as the world gets colder. They're trying to bring back the Cold War. So now we can be afraid of the Russians all over again and build giant missile silos and stuff at huge cost, and it'll make the defense contractors very happy. I have to tell you, we as a species are cursed by the fact that we never appreciate the wise people in our midst until they're gone, whether that was George Carlin, Mark Twain, or Dwight D. Eisenhower, who on his farewell address warned us what the military-industrial complex was going to do to us all. And they've done it. And they've got huge weapons, and we're all broken in debt.
Okay, great. I just add one thing. To your list of wise people, I would add H.L. Mencken. I'm going to let you go. I'm sure people have a lot smarter things than I have to say. You have a great program. I'll be listening.
Well, thank you very much, Thomas, all the way from Sweden. Boy, just what a reach this show is getting. We have audience from all over the globe. So aloha, Thomas. Thank you. Mahalo. Anyway, we're almost out of time for this first hour, and so I'm going to finish up with this really interesting story. You probably remember a couple of months ago, the Pentagon came under fire because they were providing retired military officers to the TV networks to comment positively about how wonderful and fuzzy and cuddly the war in Iraq was for all of us, and we should all love it. And it was a violation of a legal ban on domestic propaganda by the government. Not the first by any stretch of the imagination. I certainly count Bush's lies about Saddam's nuclear weapons as violating the ban on domestic propaganda. But the Pentagon has conducted an internal investigation and cleared itself of any wrongdoing. So what the Pentagon is now propagandizing us all that it did not violate the ban on domestic propaganda by propagandizing us. They're innocent because a guy who works for them said so. And that really just tells you how incredibly, incredibly absurd all of this stuff is getting. All right, the music means it is time to take a break, drink some more coffee, and listen to the news. When we come back, we're going to get into Gaza, Israel, the absolute disaster this war has been, not just for the Gazan people, but for the public image of Israel and the United States. We are going to be decades recovering from this one, folks. We'll be back after the news. Aloha till then.
The Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to hour two of our program today. A special shout out to all the ground affiliates out there who join us for the second hour of our show. And a gentle reminder that we talk about all the really interesting stuff during hour one. Now, if you were listening to the news break, as I was, you heard incoming Secretary of State, presumably Hillary Clinton, talking about finding a way to a durable ceasefire between Israel and Gaza. And it sounds wonderful. A durable ceasefire. Would love to have one. There's only a problem. They had a ceasefire. It lasted for 6 months until Israel broke it. Now, there's been a lot of talk about Hamas rocket this and Hamas rocket that and Iranian weapons and all the rest of the stuff. But the bottom line, and Israel has now officially admitted this, Hamas kept to the last ceasefire. They did not send any rockets over into Israel. Israel, for their part, was supposed to open up the border crossings to make it easier for Gazans to go to work, to get in food, medical supplies, raw materials, fuel, so they can run the sewage pumps, which have stopped working. Picture what that's doing to the local real estate. But Israel didn't relax the border crossings. And then on November 4th, on Election Day, when we were all distracted watching Barack Obama win his election victory, Israel attacked Gaza and killed six Palestinians without provocation. Israel claimed they were digging a tunnel. No proof, of course. And then the next day, Israel imposed a starvation blockade on all of Gaza. This is collective punishment. This is a war crime. Now, I want to point something out here, and I mentioned it on the website today, but I want to point it out now. Because no American news outlet has mentioned this. There is a key element missing in this whole story. We've been hearing about the reason Israel is bombing the border between Gaza and Egypt, and the reason they're blowing up buildings and everything. There are supposed to be massive shipments of armaments smuggled into Gaza by Iran through the Rafah tunnels. This supposed arms smuggling is the major reason given by Israel and the U.S. to do what they're doing, for the U.S. to give white phosphorus shells to Israel to use on the Gazan people, to stop the flow of Iranian arms into the hands of Hamas. Has anybody actually seen one? I mean, Israel's planes are flying over Gaza, dropping bombs. Not one has been shot down. There has been no evidence of a sophisticated man-portable surface-to-air missile fired by Hamas at the Israeli airplanes. There are no anti-tank weapons being directed at Israel's tanks, which rumble through Gaza with impunity, shelling UN distribution centers and schools. All that we have seen Hamas use are the weapons that are hammered together right there in Gaza out of old used food cans, fueled with household product materials that they get from the store and flung into empty real estate on Israel's side of the border, supposedly by Hamas. We're not entirely sure about that. They're finding all of the munitions the U.S. has supplied Israel are littered all over the ground. Nobody has come up with one of these supposed Iranian weapons being smuggled into Hamas that strikes such fear and terror into the hearts of Israelis. They're not there. Hamas is fighting with homemade weapons they've made themselves with hand-mixed propellants from local store-bought supplies. There are no Iranian weapons in Gaza. None have been seen to be used. If they were there, if Hamas was shooting down Israeli warplanes, it would be seen as a legitimate act of self-defense by the world. And they're not doing it. Now, everyone wants to talk about a durable ceasefire that is never going to happen until Israel is disarmed and prevented from committing more aggressions against its neighbors. Because this incursion into Gaza is the seventh in a row war of choice by Israel against its neighbors. And they're trying to kick up a reason to have a new war of choice in Lebanon. And we are already seeing the propaganda run up in the media about yet another war in Iran. We're going to be talking about that a little bit later in the story. But right now we're going to go to the phones. We've got Juan in Miami. Aloha, Juan. ¿Cómo está? Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Here, the question I had regarding all this is really, where's the artist's voice in all this? You know, when we seem to have no shortage of artists with opinions in this country. George Clooney tends to pipe in about everything whenever he can. Spike Lee is fairly verbal about things. But when it comes to speaking up against Israel, everybody goes conspicuously silent.
That's not 100% accurate. There are a lot of people who have tried to speak out. They immediately lose their careers.
Yes, that's true. I mean, but there are very few and far between. I mean, there's, there's more.
I disagree on that one.
Really?
I disagree on that one because I get a lot of email from some of these people who say, I tried to speak out and now I can't get work anymore. And we've seen a few of the highly visible ones who are noticed because of their sudden absence, like Rosie O'Donnell and
right.
and Willie Nelson and Martin and those people. But there are a lot of people at somewhat lower levels in Hollywood who are speaking out and their careers evaporate. And because they're not household names, people don't notice it when they vanish from the closing credits of TV shows and movies.
Yeah. I mean, it really, I guess it just goes to it says a lot about the control over the media that Israel seems to exercise in this country. And
yes,
the control
does.
Over the finance of the entertainment industry.
Yes, it does.
You know, I mean, I worked in theater most of my life. I was artistic director of a theater company. And I ended up resigning out of frustration due to the fact that we really could never accomplish anything that had any political edge to it. And it's...
Well,
it's,
yeah, that's... You know, this goes back to, you need to go to my website, and up at the top there's an article called The New McCarthyism. And it isn't just Israel. I mean, it's the U.S. government does this as well. I mean, the FBI has infiltrated Hollywood and show business. So has the CIA, because they realize that control of the minds of America up until the age of the Internet, control of the minds of America was by controlling TV and movies and what you saw. And we have had so many of these movies and TVs that show such a biased point of view. I mean, there's that new movie out. I'm blanking on the name. There's saturation advertising it all over the place. The one
James Bond guy.
And it's about a big hero because he saved all these Jewish people in World War II, and that's all well and good, and glad that he did that. But the government of Poland, of course, is issuing a protest because this same guy, the real historical character, actually helped the Soviets slaughter thousands of Polish people, and that's not in the movie.
Right.
So, you know,
we don't call them terrorists. They were freedom fighters. They were the resistance. You know, Palestinians are terrorists.
That's exactly right. That's right. The terrorists are the bad guys, and freedom fighters are the ones who we're working for. If they're pointed away from us, they're freedom fighters. If they're pointed back at us, they're terrorists. That's the general rule of thumb.
I make the same observation to people here because I'm in Miami, and Miami is practically, you know, I mean, it's practically occupied territory. And, here there's also a large population of Cubans here, I being one myself. And I constantly remind them that it's like, you know, think back at where you came from, okay? I mean, don't you see a closer connection to what the Palestinians are going through with Cuba, you know, than what Israel's going through? I mean, there should be some, at least, emotional or intellectual connection between the Cuban community and what's going on to the Palestinians.
Well, what it is objectivity is very much lost, especially when religion gets involved, and there's a huge religious component to what's going on. I mean, they're taking these stories that were told around fires by superstitious, primitive, untechnological people 2,000 years ago, and they're trying to base the modern world on them, and inevitably it leads to a lot of very strange conflicts. But really, you know, when you're raised from your entire birth believing that God wants you to have all the wealth, and that's not confined to any one religion, by the way. They all have, every religion has some component of that. When you're raised from birth to believe you're supposed to get all the goodies and everybody else is an infidel and they're supposed to wind up living in the really crappy parts of the planet, inevitably it's going to get into conflict. And there's also the situation that people who are the victims of bullying when they're young, when they grow up, they often turn into the worst sorts of bullies, and that's exactly what's happened with Israel. So, Juan, we got a break here. Thank you very much for the phone call. Call back in again. I'd like to talk to you about what's going on with the Cuban community down there. This is the What Really Happened radio show. I'm your host, Mike Rivero. We'll be back after these words from the sponsors.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
You're listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're talking during this segment. We're continuing to talk about the situation in Israel and Gaza. There is word now that Israel may vote for a ceasefire. And that's probably a very good idea, because while there is no question that Israel has inflicted tremendous amounts of military damage on the civilians of Gaza. They've killed a lot of people, women and children. They've destroyed buildings. They've shelled the UN facilities. From a public relations, political, public perception point of view, Israel has lost this one. They have destroyed what little remained of any moral justification they had for their nation, and unfortunately they have dragged the United States down with it. So as it looks like this thing is finally starting to wind up, and the interesting thing is about a war of occupation, it's a very one-sided situation, because for an occupier to win a war of occupation, they literally have got to completely kill everybody who's the enemy, that they see as the enemy. The way Tacitus put it, they created a desolation and they called it peace. But for the guerrilla fighters, the people who live on the land, on the occupied country, they don't have to win, they don't have to prevail, they only have to survive. And it is obvious that Hamas is not only going to survive this conflict, they are coming out of it with more public support in Gaza and the West Bank and in the Middle East in general. More money is going to flow to them by whatever means are possible. They are coming out looking very much like the heroic David to Israel's Goliath. And so Israel is probably figuring now's the time to quit trying to raise on a busted flush and get the heck out of Dodge and maybe try and start a war in Lebanon as a distraction. But starting today, we are starting to see the inevitable propagandistic articles attempting to assign blame and exonerate Israel. And a couple of them that came up today, one of them said anti-Semitism sweeps Europe in the wake of Gaza operation. Another one said taking the stand against hate. And these are articles that are attempting to sell the biggest lemon in history. And the gist of these articles, and we're going to see a lot more of them, the gist of these articles is that Israel could never, ever, ever do anything deserving of actual criticism. When Israel breaks the ceasefire by attacking Gaza, when they blockade the Gaza and inflict collective punishment, starvation on the public, when they use white phosphorus against civilians, they bomb the hospitals and the schools and the mosques, no reasonable person could find fault with that, according to these articles. Therefore, any criticism of Israel must be coming from anti-Semitism. Ooh, it's those bad Jew haters. They're the only ones who are complaining about what Israel is doing. Well, folks, anti-Semitism is hating somebody because of who they are, their ethnic racial background. Okay? And that is wrong. That is wrong. It is wrong to hate blacks just for being black. It's wrong to hate Muslims just for being Muslim. It's wrong to hate Jews just for being Jews. That is wrong. But people who behave badly are worthy of criticism. When the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, nobody defended their actions by saying, oh, you're just being anti-Japanese. And nobody excuses what Hitler did by saying, oh, it's just anti-Aryanism. You must hate Germans. That's the only reason you're complaining about what Hitler's doing. It's nonsense. In these two examples I just gave, I'm sure that you're saying this is absolutely ridiculous. Nobody can excuse Hitler and what he did by saying it's just prejudice against Germans. And likewise, we cannot dismiss criticism of Israel's actions by claiming it's just a racial bias. It's nonsense. It is silly. It is insulting that the authors of these propaganda pieces actually think that people out there are going to fall for this and believe it. And I'm sure among their readers who are supporters of Israel, it makes a really good talking point to say, oh, you know, what's the big deal dropping white phosphorus on little tiny babies? You're just being anti-Semitic to say that. And it's a way basically of dismissing the criticism without actually dealing with the substance of the matter, which is U.S.-supplied white phosphorus dropped onto Gazan children. And there is no question, the reason we're seeing these articles is that Israel has just crafted for itself the biggest public relations disaster all of the 21st century, and yes, we're only just getting started. But they had a really bad one today, and this is also up on my website, whatreallyhappened.com, right now. Israel has some pet Gazans that they interview regularly to get a sympathetic to Israel point of view. And they have this doctor, a Gazan doctor, lives in Gaza, is allowed to work at the hospitals in Israel. Very trusted man, very politically acceptable to Israel, is interviewed on Israeli TV a lot. They were interviewing him today when an Israeli attack killed his children while he was speaking on television. Now, when you do things like that, there's really no way to spin this as saying that anybody who complains about this guy's children being killed on Israeli TV is just being anti-Semitic. The fact is that Israel has not been picking their targets. We knew that with the UN hits in Gaza. They were bombing the UN up in Lebanon, 2006. They're not checking their targets. And here we have a politically expedient, a Gazan who is sympathetic to Israel's point of view. They're interviewing him on Israeli TV, and the IDF kills his family on TV. I mean, it's just, when you do things like that, it's kind of hard to spin that one. And it's not going to go away by just saying, oh, anybody making a fuss about that is just being anti-Jewish. It's nonsense. Yeah, you're just complaining about Hitler because you hate Germans, you know. You're just complaining about Mussolini because you just don't like Italians. I mean, it's absurd. It's time for that to go away. Now, there was another propaganda piece that came out from the ADL, basically condemning Olmert for admitting in public that he had called President Bush to order him to change the U.S. vote on the ceasefire resolution that actually got through the U.N. Security Council. Now, the backstory on that is there had been three attempts to pass a resolution calling for a ceasefire in Israel and Gaza. The third one was actually co-written by the United States, and it basically gave Israel everything they wanted. It's all Hamas' fault. They've got to stop first, and all this other stuff, but it called for a ceasefire. And it passed the Security Council unanimously with one abstention, the United States. The U.S. would have voted for it. Obviously, it was their own proposal. But Olmert called George Bush. George Bush called Condoleezza Rice. Condoleezza Rice changed the vote at the U.N. And Olmert bragged about it. And the ADL is upset with him, not because Olmert has perceived to be doing anything wrong, like telling the U.S. government how to handle their foreign policy, but that he allowed it to become public. The commentators on this over at the ADL, various Jewish media, are saying the only mistake was that he allowed it to become public. No big deal that they're telling our government what to do. It's just now they've allowed us to see it all, and now it's going to be a problem. We're going to take a break here. Join us on the air, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Well, search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
They came with their tanks and their planes, with ravaging fiery flames, and nothing remains. Just a voice rising up in the smoky haze. We will not go down in the night. Without a fight, you can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. We're talking about the various wars, and there's been a very disturbing development in the last couple of days as they talk about winding down the war in Gaza, and as it looks like Israel is going to suffer a public relations defeat equivalent to the Lebanon 2006 war. We are all of a sudden seeing a flood of stories, once again reminding us about what a terrible danger Iran is. And I had thought that this push for a war in Iran had kind of been dropped back after the Russia and Georgia debacle. Now, just to sort of remind you back then, in November of 2007, the United States and Israel began supplying arms and training to the military in Georgia. And then, of course, last year, you know, we had this little bit of a dust-up where somebody somewhere started shooting at the Russians, and we're still not sure who, and Russia basically came into Georgia. Now, my analysis of the situation was, if you look at the map, there's this land bridge between the Caspian Sea and the Black Sea, and this land bridge is pretty much the major route by which Russia would be able to support and supply Iran via convoys coming through the tunnels in the Caucasus Mountains. And my analysis was that the United States hoped to kick off a prolonged border war between Georgia and Russia that would blockade those tunnels from Russia's use, that would sort of lock Russia into the north part of that land bridge so that Iran would be cut off, other than by airlift, which is a much more expensive way to support a military operation. Obviously, Russia didn't go along with the plan. They just blew through Georgia like it was wet Kleenex. And at that point, we stopped hearing about a new war in Iran. Well, all of a sudden, just in the last few days, we're starting to see more and more stories about how close Iran is to a nuclear weapon. And they're importing prohibited materials. Al-Qaeda's new headquarters in Iran. We're starting to see these puff pieces in the newspaper to get Osama bin Laden's name back in front of us, at least through the person of his son. And it's another propaganda pre-sale campaign. And starting first with the stories about Osama bin Laden's son, we're seeing this report about the U.S. Treasury is freezing their assets that are under U.S. control. We don't know that there are actually any. And this article does not say that these individuals have actually done anything. It is simply alleged they're supported or linked to Al-Qaeda. It's just alleged. They haven't actually done anything to warrant news coverage. These stories exist purely to get the name in front of your eyes over and over again. We saw the same thing in August of 2001, when there was a whole flood of stories about what a nasty person Osama bin Laden was. And it was so obvious and heavy-handed, I commented at the time, you know, Osama hasn't done anything to warrant this kind of news coverage. He's being sold to the American people as a villain, and something's going to happen for which he will get the blame. And sure enough, on September 11th, the World Trade Towers came down, and even before the dust had cleared, the news media was saying, well, it was probably that fiend Osama bin Laden, and we've got to go get him. And he's in, I don't know, where are we planning on invading? Afghanistan. Okay, he must be in Afghanistan. And we were off and running to that war. And we're seeing that same sort of thing now. I want to address a couple of the other stories. The story that Al-Qaeda's leaders are now hiding in Iran. First of all, there is reason to suspect that Al-Qaeda does not really exist. Yes, there's a lot of people out there who don't like us. We've been invading their country and killing their people. It's kind of hard to make friends when you're doing that sort of thing. But the word Al-Qaeda, the literal translation means the base. And it is thought that the name originated back during Charlie Wilson's war in Afghanistan, when the United States kept a database of the Mujahideen fighters who were helping the United States against the Soviet Union, including Osama bin Laden, who was on our side, was working for the CIA. And it makes an evil-sounding name for the media to use. Al-Qaeda is coming to get you. There's only one problem with it. In Arabic slang, Al-Qaeda means a toilet. And Araisha Al-Qaeda means I'm going to the toilet. Now, if you were a real Mideast Muslim terrorist group, are you going to name yourself the toilet? Hello, I'm from the toilet. I'm here to knock your buildings down. People start laughing at you. It's kind of hard to build a sense of terror when you call your terrorist group the toilet. It's a made-up name. It's Emmanuel Goldstein. If you've ever read the book 1984 by George Orwell, Osama bin Laden is Emmanuel Goldstein. He is an enemy created by the state to terrorize their people into acceptance of a perpetual war policy. It's a big cover-up. So wherever the United States wants to attack, Al-Qaeda is hiding there. Al-Qaeda is in Afghanistan. Boom. Al-Qaeda is in Iraq. Boom. Al-Qaeda is in Lebanon. Boom. Al-Qaeda is in Iran. Boom. They're going to keep on just over and over again. So that's what's going on there. Now, Iran close to building nuclear weapons. They keep trotting this one out. Iran is enriching uranium for a nuclear power plant, which they are allowed to have under the Nuclear Nonproliferation Agreement, which Iran has signed, the United States has signed, Israel has not signed. Little footnotes you need to keep in mind there. Iran's nuclear facilities are under constant surveillance and inspection by the International Atomic Energy Agency. That's the people out of the United Nations who are tasked with making sure that member nations are conforming to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Agreement, that materials and equipment for peaceful uses of atomic energy, such as medicine and power generation, are not diverting those materials to weapons use. And so far, the IAEA says Iran is not doing anything other than building a power station. Now, I want to step back in history because just before Israel bombed Iraq's nuclear power station, we were getting the same thing in the media. Iraq is building nuclear weapons in a secret lab underneath their reactor. It was a plausible story. Everybody knew Israel was doing that under Dimona. Ever since Mordecai Vanunu got pictures out and had them published in the British press. We knew that Israel had a clandestine weapons lab under their reactor. So Israel came out and said, Iraq's doing the same thing. And Israel went in and bombed the reactor complex. And following the invasion, which was, by the way, based on the lie that Iraq had nuclear weapons, inspectors looked at the ruins of the Osterwick reactor complex and they found a power station. They found a destroyed, bombed-out power station and not a single sign of any clandestine weapons development going on there. Turns out Saddam Hussein was in compliance with the United Nations resolutions. He didn't have weapons of mass destruction. It was a complete lie and a fabrication. So when you're seeing in the media about, we've got to attack this country because they're close to having this kind of weapon or they've got this kind of weapon, we have been lied to before about this. The burden of proof is on the other side. They have to prove that Iran has got these kind of dangerous weapons. And even if Iran had a nuclear weapon, they're not going to use it, not against Israel that has 200 nuclear warheads, and certainly not against the United States, which has thousands. If Iran wants to build a nuclear weapon, they'll run it out in parade so people can wave at it and say, ooh, we're great. You know, we're a nuclear nation. Iran is not going to use it. Because they know exactly it would give the United States the excuse to come in and turn the entire country into a giant, glowing, green glass parking lot. They're not going to do that. Now, another story that we're getting is this copper tungsten story. The U.S. is saying, aha, Iran is importing this banned material, copper tungsten, from China. And that means they're building intercontinental ballistic missiles with nuclear warheads, which is a bit of a reach. That's like saying, because I'm buying screwdrivers at the store that I'm building bombs, because you need screwdrivers to build bombs with. Copper tungsten, first of all, Iran has got copper and tungsten in its own borders. And if it's all that banned, why isn't China catching the heat for this purported sale? Copper tungsten has a lot of industrial uses, including nuclear power stations. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the final segment of today's show. We're getting what appears to be a good piece of news. Reuters is reporting, Israel plans to halt its Gaza offensive without any deal with Hamas. And apparently what they're trying to do is basically any deal they figure is going to make Hamas look good and Israel look bad. So they're basically going to say, okay, we've shot up enough people and we've bombed enough places and we're just going to quit and go home, which I think popular opinion is going to basically equate with the defeat in Lebanon. And I'm thinking very much of this very wonderful line. I used it as a quote on the website the other day from the movie Gandhi. And this quote by the reporter, Walker, who was following Gandhi around, and said, you know, to paraphrase that, Gaza has taken all that Israel can dish out with steel and fire, and she has not bent and she has not broken, and whatever moral ascendancy Israel may have had in this situation has ended. And I think that is a very, very true and accurate statement. And, of course, inevitably, because the United States stood side by side with Israel, provided the machines of death that Israel used, it is a defeat for the United States as well. And I think it will be perceived as such. No doubt we'll get tons and tons of spin about how merciful Israel is being to pull out after they have rained such mayhem down on the Gazan people. But I think geopolitically, Hamas has survived this. They're going to come out of this with much greater esteem and prestige, especially with the sensibilities that one finds in that part of the world. So, this may be over. Of course, this doesn't mean that we're out of the problems, because we are seeing this propaganda push to reignite a war against Iran. And Sarkozy of France has basically come out today saying Iran is running out of time. Running out of time to do what? They're not doing anything. And they're trying to make a big deal about Iran must suspend enrichment. And the claim is that Iran is enriching uranium to make weapons, and as the IAEA points out, that is not true. And it is not a trivial exercise to go from nuclear fuel to bomb material. It's actually quite a quantitative leap, qualitative leap. You know, it's a huge engineering endeavor to take a system that is designed to make reactor fuel and transform it into one that will make bomb components. So, the reality is that because the United States and Iran and France have signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, it is the U.S. and now France that are in violation of that treaty, because Iran has a legal right agreed to by the signers of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Iran has a right to build nuclear power stations and to make the fuel rods for them. That is their legal right. It is the United States that is in violation of treaty by echoing Israel's demand that Iran not have a nuclear industry at all. See, what's going on here is called transference. And to illustrate what I mean, let's say you have this couple, man and his wife. And he's fooling around. He's grabbing a little with his secretary at work or something like that. Very often you will see him come home and start to accuse his wife of having an affair. Because if he can convince himself that she is, then he doesn't feel guilty about the fact that he's fooling around. That's called transference. Well, here we have Israel. And we know that Israel has been building clandestine nuclear warheads in that lab underneath Dimona. It's an open secret. Everybody knows it now. But you see, Israel doesn't want to admit they're doing something that's bad. So they're going to start accusing everybody else of doing it. They did it with Iraq. Oh, Iraq must be building nuclear weapons underneath their reactor. So they bomb the reactor and there's no weapons lab there. Now they're doing it with Iran. Iran must be building nuclear weapons underneath their reactor. It's the old excuse. Everybody's doing it. You catch a kid stealing a candy bar at the store and he says, well, everybody does it. What's wrong with me doing it? Everybody's doing it. That's what Israel's doing. Israel's basically a 10-year-old kid with nuclear weapons. Okay, I'm building nuclear weapons, but they're doing it too. They're building bombs under their power station, so it's okay for me to do it. That's literally what's going on here. But uranium has to be enriched to between 3 and 5% to work as reactor fuel, to make a bomb out of it. It has to be enriched to 95 to 98%. That's not like there's a blender where you go from chop to puree. It doesn't work that way. It involves significant repiping, rebuilding of the centrifuge cascades, reconfiguration of them, all of which would be incredibly obvious to the IAEA. Or you have to take the same batch of material and keep sending it through the same cascade over and over and over again, which would immediately set off all the detectors that they have, that the IAEA has set up watching all of this. It is not trivial to convert nuclear fuel making to bomb making. The media wants to convince you of that. The media wants to convince you that Iran is an immediate threat justifying invasion. And as I said in the last segment, even if Iran built a nuclear bomb, what are they going to do with it besides show it off in a parade or put it in a museum to prove how great they are? They're not going to use it. They're not going to use it on Israel, which is looking for an excuse to attack Iran and has at least 200 nuclear warheads that we know of, and a key, apparently, to the American nuclear arsenal, which has thousands of weapons and delivery systems already in existence. Iran is not going to use a nuclear bomb even if they had one, because no world leader is going to commit national suicide. They may be egomaniacs and monsters, but they're not suicidal. They want their own country to survive into the future, so there'll be millions of school children admiring their statues for 100 years into the future. That's how world leaders see themselves. They're going to have statues and portraits and their money on the currency and people to admire them. If you blow up your own country, nobody left to pat you on the back, historically wise. So even if Iran built a nuclear bomb, and there's no evidence that they have, even if they built a nuclear bomb, they're not going to use it on the United States. They're not going to use it on Israel. What they'll do is they'll hold it as a deterrent. That's the reason to have these kind of weapons. They'll keep it locked up, safe and secure, and say, we have this in case we are attacked. And that's a legitimate reason for any country to have a nuclear bomb, because Israel's just launched and apparently lost their seventh war of choice in a row. The United States is invading people all over the place. Having a nuclear deterrent is not a bad idea. And now I understand North Korea has decided they're going to hang on to their nuclear weapons after all. And who can blame them with the United States and Israel acting the way that they've been acting over the last few years? All right, we're coming down here to the end of the show. I had a few more things to talk about technology and the torture scandal and taxes, but I think what I'm going to do, and I closed yesterday's show the same way, but since I've got more people listening to me today, I kind of want to make a plea, as it were. I don't ask for a lot from my audience and my readership. I'm grateful for every donation that comes in and for everybody who signs up and for all of our advertisers who keep us on the air. But we're not into this situation to make a lot of money, which is good, because we're not. But I need a big favor from all of you right now, especially with regards to this Iran situation, because Israel's going to be looking for some reason or some means to distract the world away from the resolution of the Gaza conflict. Because Israel's committed a bunch of war crimes. They did not achieve their stated political aims. And it's just a huge PR disaster. So I think that's one of the reasons we're seeing this run-up about what bad people Iran is. I need you, all of my loyal listeners and readers, when you hear people talking about how bad Iran is, you need to speak out and you need to counter with the information that you get from the blogs, from here on GCN, from anywhere. When you know these stories don't make sense, you need to point it out. You need to speak out, because when you speak out, you're going to give other people who doubt the official story and the propaganda, you're going to give them courage to speak out as well. Because right now we have a government that is convinced a new world war is the best way out of the economic crisis. And if they succeed in starting one, a lot more of our young people are going to wind up carrying M16s and breathing depleted uranium dust. And the only people who can stop that is you. So hold that thought. We'll be back Monday with our regular show. Until then, stay safe, be well, hug your loved ones, and aloha, America.